Bible and be turning to the 19th chapter of the book of Matthew. We're going to be spending our time in Matthew chapter 19 and looking at some things in the context for a little while, and then we'll make some application toward the end of our study. As you know, we're talking about things you need to know about marriage, and we're ready for the fourth of those studies, God's law on divorce and remarriage. And so we want to turn our attention to Matthew chapter 19 and verse 9. You should be familiar with that text. You probably have it memorized. If not, then you can read it on the screen before you. And I say to you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her which is put away, doth commit adultery. When divorce and remarriage is discussed, this verse comes to mind. If we were conducting this as a typical Bible class where I was asking questions, and we started with the question, cite me a passage on divorce and remarriage, that probably would be the first verse to be cited, Matthew 19 and in verse 9. Though there are other passages that have to be considered, this one bears the burden of the study. Matthew 5 comes to play, verse 32, Luke 16, 18, Mark 10 also, Romans 7, 1 Corinthians 7. But this one bears the burden of the study. John Murray said, this is the most pivotal passage in the New Testament on divorce. I think he's right. Martin Luther said, Matthew 19, 9 is a blunt, clear, plain text. And he's right. It is a blunt, clear, plain text. I'm convinced that Matthew 19, 9 is just as clear on this subject as Mark 16, 16 is on the issue of baptism. Are there some controversies over Mark 16, 16? There sure is. There's some technical things that come to play on Mark 16, but it's a clear, plain, blunt text, isn't it? Same thing with Matthew chapter 19 and in verse 9. So let's start with the historical background of Matthew chapter 19. So I encourage you to get a Bible. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 19 and let's talk about some of the things of the historical background. As we talk about the historical background, I want you to see that this discussion takes place in the dominion of Herod Antipas. That is the dominion where the Herod Antipas, I'm not sure what we did there. If somebody knows what just happened, come and fix me, please. There we go. Okay, thank you. Somebody just wanted to hear that again, I guess. All right. Let's talk about this historical background to Matthew chapter 19 in verse 9. And as we talk about this historical background, let me start again with the fact that the discussion takes place in the dominion of Herod Antipas. He's the one that beheaded John the Baptist, you remember. And it very well may be possible that the Pharisees thought, though there is some conjecture there on our part, that the same thing would happen to Jesus if they ask him a question about divorce and remarriage. And so that's in the background here as the question comes up at verse 3. We want to look at that question here in just a second. There are two major schools of thought on the cause of divorce, and they centered around Deuteronomy 24. And I apologize, you can't see that. My background got changed somehow in the transition from going to my computer to this computer. It was lighter where we could read that. But anyway, I'll read it to you. There are two major schools of thought that centered around Deuteronomy 24. And the center of the discussion was on the grounds of divorce, on Deuteronomy 24. There were two major schools of thought, Rabbi Shimei and Rabbi Hillel. Shimei said Deuteronomy 24 focused on this, that marriage or divorce was only lawful for adultery or some sexual sin, though that really wasn't what Deuteronomy 24 was saying. That was that school of thought. The other major school of thought was the Rabbi Hillel, who said you could divorce for every cause, for even over-salting or ill-cooking the food. It seems that this was the school of thought on the minds of those asking the question at verse 3. When they came to Jesus and asked a question, we'll get to that question in a moment. Can a man divorce his wife just for any reason? So you see, what they may be thinking they're doing is that here's the two major schools of thought. There was even a third and maybe a fourth, but those were the two major schools of thought. Some Jews took one view, some took another. And any answer that Jesus gives, they think he's going to put him in contrast with other Jews. And that's all they want to accomplish. So that's the background that's going on before the question is asked at verse 3. But I want us to look now at the context. And so let's start with Matthew chapter 19, and let's look at the Pharisees' question found at verse 3. Matthew chapter 19 and in verse 3, the question was, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife just for any reason? I want you to notice what the question was and was not. The question was not about divorce and remarriage. The question was about divorce. Can a man divorce his wife just for any reason? So now Jesus answers, pointing to God's law at the beginning, found in verses 4 through 6. So let's look at verses 4 to 6. Have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. So then there are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore what God has joined together, let not man separate. We noted last evening, Jesus gave four answers to that question. Some of your more modernistic commentaries will take Matthew chapter 19 and say Jesus skirted the question and avoided the question. He was asking a man to divorce his wife just for any reason, and he turns and talks about something else. I beg to differ. He hit the question head on, but he did more than tell you an answer of yes or no. He gave the reason for that. Let me give you a parallel. Do you remember the case in Luke chapter 7 where the disciples of John came to Jesus and said, are you the coming one or do we look for another? You look at that context and see if you can find where Jesus said, yes, I am the coming one, or I'm not the coming one. He didn't give an answer yes or no, but he immediately turned and worked miracles. What does that mean? He gave the answer of yes by giving them the evidence for the conclusion. Don't just accept yes. Here's the evidence for that. That's what Jesus is doing right here. That can you divorce just for any reason? He rebukes them for not knowing the answer to that. Have you not read that he which made them at the beginning? You see, Jesus goes back previous to Deuteronomy 24, goes before any rabbinical interpretation of Deuteronomy 24 to God's law at the beginning, as we started with last evening. And so here's his answer to that. God created one man for one woman for life, Genesis 1:27. If that be the case, the answer is no. Secondly, he said, the mates are to cleave to one another, to be joined together, be glued together. If you cleave to your mate, the answer to the question is, no, you can't divorce just for any reason. And then thirdly, a man and his wife are one. That is, they are one flesh. So the answer is, no, you can't divorce just for any cause. And then he said, God has joined them together, the man and the woman. Verse 6 of our context. So his answer really was, no, 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 no. And yet in our day and time, we have some of our own brethren who will say, yes, you can divorce just for any cause as long as you don't remarry. The question wasn't about remarriage at this juncture. It was about divorce. Can a man divorce his wife just for any cause? And Jesus said, no, 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 no. And here are the four reasons for those no's. But let's go further. When Jesus gives that answer, the Pharisees ask about Moses and the bill of divorce. Let's look at verse 7. Why then did Moses command to give the certificate of divorce and to put her away? And then he said, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. What they're attempting to do is to put Christ in conflict with Moses. They tried to put him in conflict with one of the rabbinical schools, and that didn't work because he goes back to the law at the beginning. He didn't comment right then about Deuteronomy 24. He will in just a second. But they're trying to put him in conflict with Moses. If what you're saying is true about God's law at the beginning, then tell us about Moses. Why did he command to give the writing of divorce? Now, the idea of command to give the writing of divorce was their terminology, not the Lord's. That's not what Deuteronomy 24 said. So what does Deuteronomy 24, 1-4 actually teach? What's it all about? Time will not permit us to go into a detailed study of Deuteronomy 24, but let's pause for a moment and talk about Deuteronomy 24. There is nothing said in Deuteronomy 24 about divorce that to encourage divorce and remarriage. You go back and read verses 1-4, which is the focal point here. There's nothing in that context to encourage divorce and remarriage. There was no command. This was a simple prohibition that the put-away woman could not remarry her first husband. That's all that text had said. It was contingency or casuistic law that had the if-then kind of construction. In other words, the text was saying, if the man puts away his wife for uncleanness, whatever that may be, and if she becomes another man's wife, and if that second husband puts her away, then she may not remarry her first husband. That's all that text said. It did not encourage divorce. It did not even say God approves of the divorce for uncleanness. Read it and see if it says that. What it said was, if she's put away and becomes another man's wife, and then he puts her away, she cannot come back to that first husband. That's all Deuteronomy 24 had to say. Now, before we look at verse 9, I want you to notice what verse 8 says. That because of the hardness of your heart, Moses permitted you to divorce. God suffered, the King James says, or permitted or allowed. God tolerated the divorce, but never gave his approval to that. Deuteronomy 24 didn't give any approval to it either. Now, what is the uncleanness there? It doesn't matter. I think I have an idea of what it is because of how that term is used elsewhere in the Old Testament, that it was some flaw found in her. But we'll see in a moment that it must not refer to adultery because the adulterer was to be stoned to death. Deuteronomy 22, two chapters before. So what is the uncleanness? I really don't care. It doesn't matter because God never gave his approval for that cause. It just said, if he puts her away for uncleanness, whatever that may be, she cannot come back to her first husband. So what was the uncleanness? Doesn't matter. I don't care what it is because God's not giving his approval to that. Make sense? Let's go further. I want us to talk about Jesus teaches his law in verse 9. I'm trying to flow through the context. Here's a question raised. Jesus said, no, you can't get a divorce just for any cause. Well, then why did Moses? Well, Moses suffered and tolerated that, but from the beginning it wasn't so. Now here's my law, verse 9. But I say unto you, whoever divorces his wife except for fornication and marries another commits adultery, and whoso marries her which is put away doth commit adultery. We're coming back to verse 9 in a moment. Now let's talk about the disciples' response, verses 10 through 12. Beginning at verse 10, the text says, his disciples said, if such is the case of a man with his wife, it is better not to marry. They said, it is better, that is, this moved into the house. This discussion is not taking place at the same place. Mark's account said they moved into the house and they began to raise questions. And their question was, they said, it is better not to marry, verse 10. If what you're saying, Jesus, is true, then it's better not to marry. And verse 11, Jesus said, I say unto you, all cannot accept this saying, but only those to whom it has been given. Now, what's he talking about? Well, he's saying not everybody can accept that. That statement, it is better not to marry, doesn't apply to everybody, but it does apply to some. To whom does it apply? Well, look at verse 12. There are eunuchs who are born eunuchs from their mother's womb. There are eunuchs who are made eunuchs. And there are those who make themselves eunuchs for the kingdom's sake. He mentioned three categories. That principle, it's better not to marry, that applies to eunuchs who are born that way, who are made eunuchs by the cruelty of men, and those who choose to be eunuchs for the kingdom's sake. That would include those of verse 9 who have no right to remarry. They make themselves eunuchs for the kingdom's sake. So Jesus said all men cannot receive that saying. Now, I know something of the context now. I know the question that was asked. I know the historical background. I know the context. Let's raise the question, is this Old or New Testament teaching? In other words, when Jesus said, and I say unto you, and he states in verse 9, whosoever shall put away his wife except it be for fornication, etc., is he explaining Old Testament law or is he giving New Testament law? That's a big discussion in the question of divorce and remarriage. So is it Old Testament or New Testament? Some claim that Matthew 19:9 is Old Testament law. And that what Jesus is doing is explaining Deuteronomy chapter 24. So some say it's not binding today because it is an explanation of Deuteronomy 24. Many of the evangelicals, you'll read some of that if you go to Zondervan or some of those kind of bookstores and you buy a book on divorce and remarriage, it likely will argue that there is no cause for divorce and remarriage, surprisingly, because this is the Old Testament law and it's explaining Old Testament law. Jesus never gave divorce and remarriage as a fornication as a cause for divorce. And so some say it's not binding because of that. Some say it is still binding in spite of that. I've read from a number of people who have said, this is an explanation of Old Testament law, and so I'm thinking they're saying it's not binding, but it's still binding in spite of that. Now, that's kind of confusing to me. But there are those who argue that. So here's the idea. There are those who say there's no cause for divorce and remarriage. You can't get a divorce and you can't remarry even if your mate commits fornication. They point to Matthew 5:32 and Matthew 19:9 and tell us that is an explanation of Deuteronomy 24. It doesn't apply to us today. Here's somebody else that does that. Those who say the guilty party can remarry, they've written a great deal on that, and they'll point to Matthew 5:32, Matthew 19:9, and they say those are explanations of Deuteronomy 24. But it still applies to us today in spite of that. Now, that's kind of confusing, but nonetheless, that's their argument. Now, listen to this carefully as I suggest. This latter category, when you hear them say that Matthew 5:32 and Matthew 19:9 are explanations of Deuteronomy 24, they're not saying what they're really trying to tell you. What they're actually telling you is that Deuteronomy 24 is an explanation of Matthew 5 and Matthew 19. How so? Because they think they find in Deuteronomy 24 that a man puts away his wife for fornication. That's the uncleanness, they think. And she may go and marry another man, even though she was put away. There's the put away fornicator remarrying, they think. So now I understand Matthew 19 because I went over to Deuteronomy 24. They tell me Matthew 19 is an explanation of Deuteronomy 24, but we have to go to Deuteronomy 24 before we understand Matthew 19. They've got it backwards. They're telling me this explains that, but really it's that explains this. And that's how they write and that's how they argue. But let's go further. I want to suggest to you that you're going to reject more than Matthew chapter 19 and verse 9 if we reject Matthew 19:9 being New Testament law. If we take verse 9 and we reject it as being New Testament law, we're going to have to reject the entire book of Matthew. If not, why not? And if we reject the entire book of Matthew, we're going to have to also reject the book of Mark as being New Testament law, and the book of Luke and the book of John as New Testament law. So any reference concerning the Lord's Supper in Matthew 26, Luke 22, that's got to go out. That's Old Testament law. So what we did a few moments ago must be Old Testament law because that's found in the Gospels, you see. And since Matthew 19:9 is Old Testament law, so is everything else in the Gospels Old Testament law. So we're going to end up rejecting more than just Matthew 19 in verse 9. Let's go to Matthew chapter 5. I want you to see a contrast. Six times in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus would contrast the Old Testament, some statement from the Old Testament, or maybe even a rabbinical interpretation of the Old Testament with not what the New Old Testament actually said, but what he taught. Notice six times. Are you in Matthew chapter 5? Notice in Matthew 5, verse 21 and 22. I just want to get a flavor of this without going through every single verse. You have heard it said by them of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders is in danger of judgment. Well, that was in the Old Testament. But, verse 22, but I say unto you, here's his law in contrast. Look at verse 27. You've heard it said by them of old, you shall not commit adultery. I know that's Old Testament. That's Exodus 20. But I say unto you, and here's his law that goes further than the Old Testament law. Let's go again to verse 31. Whoever divorces his wife, you've heard it said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. That was Deuteronomy 24. But I say unto you, he is not explaining Old Testament law. He is showing a contrast to Old Testament law. Well, it goes on all through the context. There are six times he does that. Now, let's go back to Matthew chapter 19, and you see the same thing. After raising the question at verses 7 and 8 concerning Moses giving the writing of divorce, he said, and I say unto you. So there is a contrast in Matthew 5 and Matthew 19 to Old Testament law. He is not explaining Old Testament law. He is giving New Testament law. Let us understand that Jesus' teaching applies to us now. And let's go to Luke chapter 16. Luke chapter 16. I want you to notice, and you might turn in your Bible, and you might make a marginal note, because Luke 16 is parallel, at least in principle, to what Jesus was teaching in Matthew 5, Matthew 19, and Luke chapter 10. These are parallel passages. I want you to look at verse 16. For the law and the prophets were until John. One translation will say, the law and the prophets were proclaimed until John. The New American Standard Version will say that. The law and the prophets were proclaimed until John. Now notice what he said. Since that time, the kingdom of God is preached, and everyone presses into it. So up until John, what did he say? Verse 16, the law and the prophets, that's Old Testament, were proclaimed until John. Since that time, the kingdom of heaven has been preached. Now understand what he's saying. Now drop down two verses. This is the law on divorce and remarriage. Whoever putteth away his wife and marries another commits adultery, and whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. That's missing the exception found in Matthew 5 and Matthew 19. But that's the same law. It's the same general principle of Matthew 19 in verse 9. It's in the context, the law and the prophets were proclaimed until John. But since that time, the kingdom has been preached. What Jesus is teaching is New Testament law, not Old Testament law. Now, I want you to notice a contrast in Deuteronomy 22 and 24 to Matthew 5. They can't be the same thing. Jesus cannot be explaining Old Testament law, because in Deuteronomy, you could not put away with God's approval. There's nothing that said God approved of it. There's nothing that said God encouraged that. Over here, you could put away for the cause of fornication with God's approval. That's not the same thing. Over here, this could not be referring to fornication, for the fornicator was to be stoned to death, Deuteronomy 22. Nor could it be the suspicion of adultery. Numbers 5 had a test for that. Over here, the cause would be for the cause of fornication. So Deuteronomy 24 and Matthew 19 are talking about two different things. Over here in Deuteronomy chapter 24, you're defiled if you remarry. Over here, one would be allowed to remarry if they put away their mate for the cause of fornication. No one was ever encouraged to remarry in Deuteronomy 24. They're not talking about the same thing. I'm just trying to demonstrate to you that Deuteronomy 24 and Matthew 19 are not the same. Jesus was not teaching Old Testament law. Now, if we're going to study Matthew 19, we need to explore a little textual problem here. So let's look at Matthew chapter 19. Here's what the text says, and I want you to focus on the exception phrase. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, here's the exception phrase, except it be for fornication. Except it be for fornication, that exception phrase, and shall marry another committeth adultery, and whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. Now there are those who argue that the exception phrase modifies the last clause. They say it's to be understood. It's an ellipsis. It's to be included in that. So if it does, here's how the text should be understood. I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another committeth adultery, and whoso marrieth her which is put away, except it be for fornication, commits adultery. That's the argument that's made, that exception phrase is to modify not only the first independent clause, but the second independent clause. Well, let's try that on for size and see how that works. Now, who argues that? Those who argue the guilty party can remarry have to have that. For it to work. In other words, whoever marries the one that's put away commits adultery, except If it be she put, be put away for fornication, she doesn't commit adultery. See, the put away fornicator can remarry, they say. I'll tell you somebody else that argues that. That's argued by some who argue this waiting game concept, that one who is put away can later repudiate their mate and remarry. In other words, you're put away for some cause other than fornication. You wait on your mate, and if they 2 or 3 years later remarry, now in your mind you can repudiate them, and now you can remarry. They also argue that. And I have read their writings, and I look at it, and I'm puzzled. Why are you saying that? Because you're arguing for something that says more than you want it to say. But nonetheless, they have made that same kind of contention. If that phrase fits down in the second part of our verse, it would mean the guilty party could remarry. And many of those who've told me, I think that's to be understood in the latter part of the verse, then I tell them, well, are you saying the guilty party can remarry? Oh, no, I don't believe that. That's what you just argued. That's what you just said. If it fits there, it says the guilty party who's been put away for fornication can remarry. The one put away for a cause other than fornication couldn't remarry, but if they were put away for the cause of fornication, they can remarry. That would be what the passage would be teaching. I want you to notice that the exception phrase does not fit into the second clause grammatically. It doesn't fit there grammatically. As it is used in the first independent clause, it's used as an adverbial phrase qualifying shall put away. Whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication. If we put it into the second clause, it's used as an objectival phrase qualifying is put away. It doesn't fit there grammatically. But let's forget that for a moment and let's see if it fits there textually. I wrote to Bruce M. Metzger. That name may mean nothing to you, but you find some brother around who is a Greek student, and he's you might even label him as, he's quite a Greek scholar. He reads the Greek and he knows, and ask him who Bruce Metzger is, and he is a renowned Greek scholar. I wrote to Bruce Metzger at Princeton University and asked him this question. I said, does the exception phrase, except it be for fornication, modify the phrase, and whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery? His answer was, no, it qualifies the preceding clause. And so say F.W. Gingrich and others. So the text, the exception phrase doesn't fit in there grammatically, we've noticed. It doesn't fit there textually, nor does it fit there logically for many of those who want to put it there. They want to put it there thinking it accomplishes something and it teaches more than they want it to teach. They end up teaching the guilty party can remarry when they don't want it to teach that at all. Let's spend the rest of our time talking about the application of the text. So I want us to slow the pace down just a little bit. Get your Bible open to Matthew chapter 19. And let's make some application now of what we've just looked at. When we've looked at the background, we've looked at what Jesus said. It is New Testament law. We see where the exception phrase fits. Let's make some application of our text. Let's make some application concerning divorce. Now, I want you to notice Jesus has asked this question, can a man divorce his wife just for any reason? That was the question. Notice what the question was not. It was not about divorce and remarriage. The question was about divorce. Can a man divorce his wife just for any reason? And his answer was no. And he gave four reasons for that that we've been over multiple times. So can you divorce just for any reason? No, 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 you can't do that. That was his answer. Jesus only gave one reason for divorce in verse 9. That was the cause of fornication. A man could put away his wife for the cause of fornication. Now, there may be a number of reasons that one may get a divorce. You may put away your mate for personal dislike, burning the bread, or maybe you can't get along. But Jesus only gave one cause, and that was the cause of fornication. You won't find another in all the pages of the New Testament. Now, there are brethren who argue you can divorce for multiple causes as long as you don't remarry. Remarriage was not in the question at verse 3. The question was about divorce. Can you divorce just for any reason? And Jesus said, no. What reason did Jesus give? He only gave one, and that was the sin of fornication. Now, it is argued that what Jesus is condemning is divorce and remarriage in Matthew 19. He is not condemning divorce, verses 4 to 6. He's condemning divorce and remarriage. All right? If when it's for a cause other than fornication, if what he's condemning is divorce and remarriage, then what he must be authorizing when it's for fornication is divorce and remarriage. Does that mean that your mate commits fornication that you can't divorce unless you intend to remarry? You say, well, no. That's not what it's saying at all. Well, then why are we tying divorce and remarriage at verses 4 to 6 when Jesus' question was, or the question to Jesus was about divorce? Let's talk about remarriage. We've talked about divorce. Let's talk about remarriage and spend the rest of our time there. Let's go back to verse 9. In Matthew chapter 19 in verse 9, I want you to see that there is a distinction and one who puts away and one who is put away. I hate to take the time to do this. Whoever's controlling this in the back, can we change that background to just a white background? We can't. Y'all changed it on me. We can't change it back. King Xerxes. There's a law that's been made into irrevocable, I guess, in the book of Esther. All right, we can't change that. All right. Let's go with what we got. Jesus said, and I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. I want you to notice Jesus makes a distinction in one who puts away and one who is put away. If you didn't see it, let's read that again. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. All right, that's the first independent clause. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away, there's one who puts away their mate. Now here's the second independent clause. And whoso marrieth her which is put away. Jesus made a distinction in one who puts away their mate and one who is put away. All right? Now let us notice. Let's divide the verse in part A and B. We've got the same verse. We're just separating by independent clauses. By independent, we simply means this part can stand alone without reference to that one, and it's a standalone concept. Part A is an independent clause. Part B is an independent clause. What do you find in Part A? Part A talks about the one who puts away their mate. Part B talks about the one who is put away by their mate. Remember, Jesus makes a distinction in one who puts away and one who is put away. Let's read the verse again. I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. Now, what do we learn from that verse? Well, let's take part A. From part A, I learn the one who puts away their mate for the cause of fornication, when they remarry, they do not commit adultery. You say, where'd you learn that? I didn't learn it down here. I learned that up there. See where I learned that? I learned that a man who puts away his wife, because fornication is the exception, when they remarry, they don't commit adultery. That's where I learned that. Let's learn that again. What did I learn from that? A man who puts away his mate for fornication, when he remarries, there is no adultery. From part A, I also learned this. The one who puts away their mate where there is no fornication, when they remarry, they do commit adultery. You say, where'd you learn that? I didn't learn that down here. I learned that up there. I learned that in part A. Whosoever shall put away his wife and marries another commits adultery. The exception didn't apply because there is no fornication. All right, here's something else I learned. From part B of that, I learned that one who is put away, when they remarry, they commit adultery. You say, wait a minute. Where'd you get that? I learned that down here. I didn't learn that up there. I learned that here. And whoso marrieth her which is put away. You say, isn't there an exception in that? It's not in the text. You won't find it in any translation. It doesn't fit there grammatically. It doesn't fit there textually. You put it there, the guilty party can remarry. Maybe that's what you want. I don't think so. So what did I learn? The one who is put away doth commit adultery. You say, wait a minute. That's not fair. Now you know why we talked about that on Friday night. That doesn't seem fair to me. It is not my place to judge. The Lord said, whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. You say, I don't like that. Don't care if you like it or not. You say, that doesn't seem fair to me. It doesn't matter if it seems fair. You say, well, that don't make sense to me. But a lot of things don't make sense to me. The Lord said, and whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. What did I learn from that? I learned the one who is put away, when they remarry, they commit adultery. See, divorce and remarriage isn't all that hard. Someone comes and they say, well, here's my situation. And I want to know if I've got a right to remarry. Well, you tell me about your divorce. Did who put who away and for what cause? Well, she put me away. Well, then you fit right down here. You've been put away. You don't have a right to remarry. Another one comes along and he says, well, I put my mate away. All right. Was it for fornication? If it does, you fit up there at the top. You have a right to remarry. Did you put her away because of a cause other than fornication? You don't have a right. It isn't all that hard to figure out, is it? It's not that hard. In fact, that's so simple, you may have missed it. So where did I get the man who puts away his wife for fornication when he remarries, there's no adultery? I learned that in the first part. Where did I get this idea that one who puts away for a cause other than fornication, when they remarry, they do commit adultery? I learned that from the first part, part A of the verse. And where did I get the idea that the one who is put away, no exception is given, when they remarry, they commit adultery? I learned that from part B, and whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. That's what Matthew 19:9 says. That's what Luke 16:18 says. That's what Matthew 5:32 says. They all say the same thing. Now let's go further and talk about one more thing, and the lesson will be yours. Let's talk about the order of the text. Does the order of the text make any difference? It is argued by some the order of the text does not matter. The sequence of events does not matter. In other words, it doesn't matter when the divorce takes place, or when the fornication takes place, or when the remarriage takes place. Now let's talk about the order of the text. Let's go back to Matthew 19 in verse 9. The order of the text would be, you can't read it, but fornication put away and remarriage. How do I know that's the order? Whosoever shall put away his wife, that's mentioned first, except it be for fornication. That means the fornication had to come first, or the putting away wouldn't be for that reason. And shall marry another. So he puts her away because she committed fornication. So fornication came first. Then he puts her away. Now he has a right to remarry. That's the order given in the text. Now let's raise the question, does order make any difference? Well, let's take the first top of the slide here. We have Mark 16:16. We have belief in baptism and salvation. We have three elements. Does order make any difference? The text says, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. You believe first, then you're baptized, and then you receive salvation. Many of our religious friends have those same three elements and teach those same three things. They teach on faith, they teach on salvation, they teach on baptism. But they teach you believe and then you're saved and then later you should be baptized. That's the same elements, just in a different order. Does that make any difference? I've asked some people publicly, which one of those two statements do you believe? I believe both of those. Now they're contradictory. You can't believe both of those. Does salvation come before or after baptism? Which is it? Order makes a difference when it comes to Mark 16:16. Now, in Matthew 19, the order makes a difference. Remember, the fornication comes. That's the reason you're putting her away. And then you have a right to remarry. But man has that reversed. There is the divorce. There's the putting away quite often. The man remarries. And then when she commits fornication later, that justifies this second marriage. He's got a different order. That's not the order Jesus gave. Or someone comes along and he puts away his wife and then he waits a while and watches when she commits fornication. Now that justifies his remarriage, even though he put her away for some other cause. He's got a different order. He's got the divorce, then he's got the fornication, and then the remarriage. Does order make a difference? It did in Mark 16. If I can change the order here, then I can change the order up there. Would anybody object to me standing before you today saying, he that believeth will be saved, and then after a while you should be baptized? Think these elders would tolerate that? Do you think Justin would stand up and begin to refute that? Because we got the order out of place. I'm preaching the same thing that he's preaching, faith, repentance, and baptism, but I've just got it in a different order. Well, the same thing comes when it comes to the matter of divorce and remarriage. So what have we seen this morning? That's a kind of a hurried, quick overview of Matthew chapter 19, looking at its context. And so let's just review what we've just seen. Well, we saw in the context, this is a historical setting. In the historical setting, they're asking Jesus about divorce, perhaps thinking we're going to put him in contrast with one of these rabbinical schools and he's going to be in trouble. When Jesus didn't fall for that, he points to God's law at the beginning. They said, well, then tell us about Moses. Maybe we can put him in contrast with Moses. He said, Moses tolerated some things that were from the beginning. It wasn't so. I say unto you, here's my law on divorce and remarriage. And then some said, well, it's better not to marry. And he said, that's right, for some, but not for everybody. That doesn't apply to everybody. And then we raise the question, is it of Old or New Testament? It is of New Testament law, not of Old Testament law. And then we've made application of the text. What about divorce? There is no cause for divorce except for the cause of fornication. When asked, can you divorce just for any cause? Jesus' answer was, no, 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 no. Can't do that. Who has a right to remarry? The one who puts away their mate for the cause of fornication has the right to remarry. No one else has that right. Appreciate you listening this morning. I appreciate your kind attention. I don't know if that means we have more time, but I'm done. So you're done. You're done as well.